Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The state reported three new Alaska resident COVID-19 deaths over the weekend, including an Anchorage man in his 60s, an Anchorage woman in her 80s, and a Goose Creek Correctional Center male inmate in his 60s. The additional fatalities bring the number of Alaskans known to have died from COVID-19 since the pandemic began to 103. Yesterday, the State Department of Health and Social Services reported that there were 125 patients with COVID-19, plus 13 others suspected of having the virus in Alaska hospitals. 17 patients were on ventilators. The DHSS also reported 517 new Alaska resident cases Sunday. The new cases were confirmed as of Saturday night, and the communities with the highest numbers were Anchorage with 268, Fairbanks with 37, Eagle River with 27, and Wasilla with 23. Elsewhere in the interior, there were 9 new cases in Delta Junction, 8 in North Pole, 5 in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, 5 in the Southeast Fairbanks Census Area, 4 in the Yukon-Koyukuk Census Area, and 1 each in Healy and Tok. Nome also had a new case. Additionally, there were 6 new non-resident cases announced, including 1 in the oil industry at Prudhoe Bay. In a video update posted late Friday, State Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink said most virus spread is happening between friends who fail to take precautions, noting many people do not know they have the virus.
You can really spread the virus from person to person before you feel ill, and as a result, it can be hard to know when to stay home. And that's why we ask people to mask and stay distance to minimize that spread, even if they don't feel like they're sick.
Dr. Zink said most people do not get seriously ill, but over 70% of Alaskans are either over age 65 or in some other high-risk category. Fort Greely has elevated its COVID-19 alert level and is taking precautions in response to the Delta Junction area's growing number of cases. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Fort Greely officials temporarily closed the Child Development Center Friday and halted programs for children and youths after an employee tested positive for coronavirus. Post officials said contact tracing had revealed what they called, quote, numerous and direct contacts throughout the facility where those programs are offered.
This decision was made to ensure the health and safety of our community and the readiness of our warfighters.
Post spokesman Chris Maestas says concern over the health of the warfighters is what led the 3-star general who runs Greeley's higher headquarters to approve elevating the installation's health protection condition from HP Con Bravo to HP Con Charlie. That's the second highest level of alert that adds more precautions to reduce personnel's risk of exposure to the virus.
The change to HP Con Charlie really doesn't affect most people, except that you're going to end up working from home if you work as a garrison employee.
Maestas says garrison employees who oversee operation of the post will be required to work from home as much as possible. The HP Con Charlie directive also seeks to minimize interaction between those whose job requires them to go to work on post. It also directs the Fort Greely dining facility to offer only takeout service, and it reiterates the need for making an appointment to be seen at the post medical clinic.
This does not mean that the installation will close. It just means that access to Mission Essential Partners still continues.
That means access to Fort Greely remains limited to civilian and military personnel and others who hold a Department of Defense ID card, as well as DOD contractors and vendors and authorized grocery delivery workers and short-term visitors. Post officials say if all goes well, the child care center will reopen and child and youth services programs will resume next Monday, November 30th. Reporting from Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
The city of Fairbanks is challenging a decision that's allowed a federal civil rights suit filed by the Fairbanks Four against the city to proceed. The city announced Friday that it has petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court to review a decision by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. The four Native men who spent decades in prison for a murder evidence later showed others were likely responsible for are suing the city for racially biased and malicious prosecution. Their convictions were vacated under a 2015 settlement with the state, but the Ninth Circuit Court ruled in June that the men are not barred by a past Supreme Court precedent that requires judicially proven innocence to file a civil rights suit. A statement from the city says the Ninth Circuit ruling was a, quote, significant departure from the well-established law set out by the Supreme Court, unquote. The city says a decision from the Supreme Court is expected in January. Three of the Fairbanks Four, George Fries, Marvin Roberts, and Eugene Vent, are Alaska Native, and the fourth, Kevin Pease, is American Indian. The men were convicted of the 1997 beating death of Fairbanks teen John Hartman, but another Fairbanks man, William Holmes, who was already imprisoned for other killings, testified in 2015 that he and a group of friends, not the Fairbanks Four, are responsible. A coalition in the Matanuska-Susitna borough is trying to prevent gravel mining on University of Alaska Fairbanks-owned Greenbelt property. Alaska Public Media reports that recreational users were caught off guard this fall when sampling work began on the land south of Wasilla, adjacent to UAF's Matanuska Experiment Farm. University officials say they need to know how much the 70-acre property is worth and whether excavating gravel could provide revenue. Alaska Farmland Trust Executive Director and spokesperson for the group, Save the Matanuska Greenbelt, Amy Pettit, says the land is too precious to put a gravel pit on.
The public loss and the the opportunity cost of destroying this property far outweighs any benefit financial.
UAF says it needs the revenue a gravel pit could generate. UAF Chancellor Dan White points to a provision in a three-year, $70 million state funding reduction compact UA Regents signed with the governor.
One of the bullets is that that the university will monetize its resources, and resources being its lands and the things in its lands and the capital assets to try to substitute for some of the reductions in the base funding.
White says the university has expenses for things like heat and electricity that must be paid for, so base funding reductions have to be made up for with personnel and program cuts.
If the compact were not a significant reduction in our budget, would we be assessing the gravel at this resource at this moment? And I'd say we probably would not, but that doesn't mean that we wouldn't at another time.
White says the university is assessing how much the land is worth by taking gravel samples, but that the university is also working with the Save the Matanuska Greenbelt group to come up with alternative ideas. Both sides say that could include a local entity purchasing the land or a long-term lease that would leave the Greenbelt alone. Pettit suggests trail use or parking fees to generate revenue and questions the motives behind the gravel mine proposal.
I absolutely think there's a political angle to this. When the governor tells you that you have to reduce your budget, one of the strategies is to reduce the budget in a way that is the most painful and the most obvious to your constituents. So your constituents will help you argue for the reason why that budget piece shouldn't be cut.
Any decision on what to do with the land is up to the University of Alaska Board of Regents. The assessment of its value might not be done before the board's next meeting in February. I'm Dan Bross.